You know, it's so easy when you get a sponsor for the show and you use their services. And I do. It's Karen Locker's Solutions for E-Commerce. Solutionsforecommerce.com/momentum will get you 10% off right now. I've been using her for, I guess it's been a year and change since I first interviewed her. Hired her pretty much right after the show because I'm like, I need everything you're talking about. I've got problems with stranded inventory. And guess what? I had lots of problems with stranded inventory last year as the restrictions were coming through. Boom, she'd fix it. If there's an issue with the photo, fixed. All that kind of stuff. I get refunds now. They just show up. Hey, you know, we're replying to your cases. Here's your refund. My feedback. I don't have to fix my own feedback anymore. It's automatically done. And I see the notes coming through. I still once in a while get an email from Amazon saying, hey, you have some stranded inventory. I send it to her and most of the time it's already been dealt with and fixed. But let me tell you, being a single operator, my wife and I, this just takes so much off our plates. I can't say enough about it. It's Solutions for E-Commerce, the number four, solutionsforecommerce.com/momentum to get 10% off her services. Be sure you tell her I sent you, solutionsforecommerce.com.
Welcome to the E-Commerce Momentum Podcast, where we focus on the people, the products, and the process of e-commerce selling today. Here's your host, Stephen Peterson.
Welcome back to the E-Commerce Momentum Podcast. This is episode 197, Charlene Anderson. This is the second time I've had Charlene on. Her previous episode is episode 76, and the story, her story is such a great story. Absolutely, very worth going listening to, all about a brick and mortar that she ran and moving it. And she was in Hawaii. And I mean, it's a really great story and give you some real good perspective. But man, did we get into it in this first section of this one about husband and wife, you know, and I think that that is so important that if you're considering having you know, both you and your spouse work in the business, it is absolutely worth listening to. I think her perspective is very, very strong. Let's get into the podcast. Welcome back to the E-Commerce Momentum Podcast. And sorry for my scratchy voice. I think I lost it at the Resonate conference when there was a room of 100 and some odd people and you have to go a few octaves up. That's never good when you talk for a living. So I got to pay attention to that next time. I'm so excited about my guest because it's to bring her back. I'm very fortunate because she's so experienced. But I love her name comes up to me so often from so many different people. It's just very interesting on how long and stable Charlene Anderson, welcome back, her group has been. You have a long-standing group of people.
I do. I'm really, really lucky. I have people who...
I don't know if it's lucky. No. I'm not going to let you get away with that. I know you're trying to be humble. But in fairness, you can only get away with it once if you were going to take advantage of people, right? We had that conversation earlier.
Yes, we did. Yeah.
And it's true. So, you know, don't sell yourself short. And I know it's hard to hear that, but it's the truth. There's some truth to the fact that you've been reliable, consistent. People don't stay with you. They're paying you money. They're not staying with you for that length of time unless they're getting value.
Well, I think part of it is they know I'm doing it while they're doing it. You know, I'm an active Amazon seller. The vast majority of my income comes from Amazon sales. So being in the trenches with everybody else is something people can relate to, you know, because I'll get on there and complain about an issue with Amazon or talk about this and that. And it's really relatable as to other groups where you just don't feel like the people involved are there with you at the same time.
I've seen that a few times where people say, hey, they used to be sellers and they don't sell anymore. You know, I think about some of the groups that I'm in and, you know, we talk about Andy Slim. It's Andy, who's private label, which I know that's not your thing. He's a huge seller. And so I watch them say, hey, here's what I do with my account. And I'm assuming that's what people are so attractive to you is because you can say, here's what I did for my stuff. Because the same thing is happening to you as it is to me, right?
Exactly. That's exactly right. And that's you know how fast Amazon is changing. It's like every morning we wake up as something has changed, you know? And in true Amazon fashion. You're never warned about anything. It just happens. It appears. My Seller Central is all different now, and nobody else's is different yet. Well, mine is, you know, so they're obviously rolling something out. But being there every day, dealing with it every day, and not just dealing with Amazon, but dealing with vendors, dealing with trucking companies, dealing with insurance, dealing with approvals for importing certain kinds of products, all of that. That's stuff we do every day. So it's a really valuable resource for everybody.
Hmm. You know, the other thing that's very attractive about your group is that you and your husband are both Amazon sellers. I think, you know, there are lots of couples who want to do this, but it's difficult because you spend a lot of time as a husband and wife, and then to be in business in some way or in the same business, this could very quickly consume your whole life, and then you could lose your relationship.
That's a really, really good point, and I'll tell you how we solve that.
I love it. Tell me. I want others to listen. Pay attention, men.
We both
especially.
Sell on Amazon, but we have separate Amazon businesses.
It's like separate beds, right? It's like
he has his own account approved by Amazon. You know, we went through that whole process of getting approval for a second selling account and all of that. And I have found, because I am really hyper-focused, really detail-oriented kind of person, and he's not so much, I just knew that it wouldn't work if we were working in the same business and I didn't feel he was working as hard as I thought he should. That was kind of the whole thing, right? I didn't want him out, you know, going for a bike ride when there was stuff to process. I know that would drive me crazy. So this way, it's his business. He can choose to go for the bike ride or not. And you know what? If he doesn't get the stuff shipped, it doesn't hurt my business.
But how do you handle the competitiveness? I mean, do you end up in a competition from time to time?
Not at all, actually. And we both, you know, support each other's. Like, okay. I'll help him pack and he'll help me pack and he'll do the photography. He was a professional photographer for many years. So he does the photography for my stuff. I'll help him with his pay-per-click advertising, you know, that kind of thing. It's just that it takes away the pressure of feeling like the other person isn't working to the standard that you expect.
You know, what's very powerful there too is that you had mentioned he was the photographer. That's his strength. And you, with the pay-per-click and all the detail-oriented stuff, sounds like it's your strength. So you're playing to each other's strengths and you're using them effectively. That's an awesome thing. Well, hence the reason you're still married, right? That's the way our marriage works, or it should work.
That's exactly right. And knowing the pitfalls before you go into business with a spouse or a partner is really, really important. This kept it where we each can take a lot of pride in our own successes, but then I take a lot of pride in his too, because he works a real, quote, real job in the real world. And so this is his building for another income, you know, kind of thing. So it is hard for him because he has limited hours and limited energy, you know, because you want a life outside of work. You just don't want to work all the time. So it's worked out really well. I think he's had his Amazon business for 4 or 5 years now. I've been on Amazon since I looked. My first sale was in 2001.
Oh, my God.
Back when you could only sell books.
That's crazy.
And there was not even a hint of FBA, you know, and then it opened up a little more and you could sell media and, you know, then it opened up more and then FBA came and that was kind of it. But yeah, that's a long time on a platform.
It's a really long time on a platform. And especially the platform today is nothing, not even close to what it looked like back then. I mean, there's nothing, I don't even know if anything's similar at all. I mean, I'm only FBA since 2011. So you would have been on in what, 2008?
Yeah, when it first started.
And it would have been nothing, right? I mean, there was nothing, right? It was the old eBay. I remember when eBay was, you know, one picture and then you had to pay for additional. I mean, all that nonsense.
Oh, yeah.
Amazon was very similar. And so you were there right from the beginning. When you're talking to other people about what you do for a living, how does that conversation go?
Kind of depends on who it is. If it's somebody who's just kind of in a cocktail party kind of conversation, it's, I own an online retail store. And the vast majority of my products are held in Amazon warehouses and Amazon ships for me.
26 states. That's my line. I always say I have inventory in 26 states. I don't see it. And they're always like, what? I'm like,
yeah, that's yeah. Yeah. And then, you know, if it's people who are interested in the business, then I get a little more, you know, into the nitty gritty details. But any more than that, and people, you can see the blank look coming over
yeah,
your face.
Yeah,
it's like,
yeah,
this
yeah.
is way too much.
Let me go get you a beer. Let me go get you a drink.
Yeah,
do you vet people because you have a service that you sell? I mean, do you vet people to be sure they're the right fit? Because I think back to the day we went to a friend's house. Love this couple. They're now since divorced. No surprise. I remember going to the house and they're like, Steve, we have a business opportunity. You should come and see it. And I'm real vague. And I'm like, okay, we'll go. We love these couple, right? We go. And I'm watching this guy give this demonstration. And then I saw this little globe in the top right-hand corner. I'm like, is that an Amway globe? And the guy was like, wait. No, hold on. Let me just talk about, I'm like, that's Amway, isn't it? I'm a noticer. And honest to God, the whole room turned around. And then all of a sudden I caused this uproar because I recognized that little globe. I'm like, that's Amway, isn't it? Do you have that fear? Because everybody, I have people all the time, Steve, teach me how to do this. I'm like, dude, I've been doing it 6 years in addition to being a full-time accountant. I was at the time, I've retired. But doing that and all these other things, it took me 6 years. I can't give you 6 years. You know, how do you vet or do you vet?
Well, I have a couple things I say when people ask about joining the group. I say one is we will not give you lists of wholesalers. That's the big one. We're not going to give you a list of 10 wholesalers in health and beauty to try, you know, or 10 wholesalers in toys. That's not what we do. We'll teach you how to find them and what to say when you find them and how to deal with them when you find them and all of that, but we're not going to give you that list. So that immediately cuts out 99% of the people.
But wait, you mean I'm going to have to work? Hello? What? Hello?
And, you know what? And that's exactly how I say it to people. You're going to know how to do it, but you'll have to do it yourself.
Hmm.
You know, and to be honest, giving a list is not helping people.
You're not.
It isn't.
You're feeding them a fish. You're not teaching them the fish. Yeah.
I mean, I wasn't going to go there.
No, it's the truth, though. It's a great example, though. It really is a good way to describe it.
So that vets like the vast majority of people. And then it's very interesting. I can tell you within 3 or 4 days of somebody joining our group if they're going to be successful.
By the questions that they ask?
Or the fact that they actually respond to the link we give. We've done a 7-part series on photography for Amazon. Multi-camera setup. My husband just went crazy with this. Like 3-camera setup, you know, overhead, the whole deal, like, you know, the Today Show kind of camera setup to do these webinars on photographing your stuff. And they are, you know, you can't just find them on YouTube. You have to have you have to be approved to see it, whatever that's called. And we can tell if the person doesn't go in and answer his email so he can put them on the list, they will not make it because they don't care enough to go even sign up to see the videos. That's a big one. And the second is if they don't ask questions. You know?
So I've had people tell me that when they have, when they do courses or whatever, less than 10% of people take action. Do you find that?
I think we have a much higher percentage in the group, but I do have some who have joined and maybe they're getting a lot, but they never post anything. So I don't have any of that feedback, but I think in the general product, that's probably, you know, there's that 80-20 rule kind of thing that also could go into that. But I think because it's an unusual group in that there are no rules. You know, I don't have a set at the top. Do you know we have like zero drama, and I'm knocking on wood right here while I say it. It's a group of like-minded people. And
that's important.
You're either going to like me and the way I run things or you're not, you know, and you're going to like my style of teaching or you're not. And people know me from having done other podcasts. The Thrifting for Profit podcast is one I've been doing with Deborah Conrad forever. So they kind of know my style and they know where it's coming from. They aren't going to get stuff handed to them, but they're going to get the information they're going to need. They're going to get more than their money's worth. So I've got probably half of the group now has been with me since the week it started.
That's crazy.
I love that. And these are people who have built a business from like nothing. I think I was telling you in the pre-show that we have a woman who was homeless and worked on Amazon, worked on eBay, bought her own house last year.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
The other thing that's impressive about your group is you have a lot of couples. And so, again, I think it's because of you and your husband finding a way to make it work for you, which might not work for everyone, but the way you were, that's relatable. And ultimately, mm-hmm. I mean, let's face it, wouldn't it be awesome? I mean, let's just dream a little bit. Wouldn't it be awesome if you and your husband both had kind of the same things of interest? You both share in the success and reap the rewards, and you get to go and enjoy the vacations and the lifestyle that you desire. Because quite frankly, that's, I think, what most people really, really want. I hope that's what people want.
That's so true. And the last part really rings home because we just got back from a great vacation, you know, couple criteria. It had to be warm. It had to be luxurious. It had to have internet because
business, right? You both do.
Yeah, we do. So we spent a little over 2 weeks in Bora Bora.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. And thanks to Amazon, you know, because that's an expensive trip. You know, we stayed at the Four Seasons down there and flew first class on Air France thanks to Amazon. So it is doable if you have that goal. And I think that's really important for me. Having a trip in mind, because I love to travel, is like the biggest carrot in front of me you can imagine.
That's awesome.
It's my carrot. So everybody needs to find their own carrot.
Yeah, and that's a good way to put it, because what motivates you might not motivate someone else. And that's okay. It shouldn't. Don't live Charlene's dream. Live Steve's dream, right? Steve should.
Right.
I mean, that's the way it should be.
Yours may be to buy a Porsche 911, you know?
I still have hair. The fact that I... You know, once I lose my hair, I got to get one. But until then, I'm going to hold on to it. Because I think that might be, there's two rules. If you have a Porsche, a convertible, you're going to be bald because you have to wear a hat. And when you wear hats, you lose your hair. So it's just kind of a thing. So, hey, let's do this. Let's take a break. When we come back, I want to start talking about things that you've learned. Because you've been, I didn't call you old. You've been saying you did it for a long time. And I think you've learned a lot of things. And I want to bring people into the future, because as you say, it's changing almost every day. So how do you handle that? And how have you handled that? We'll be right back. You've heard me talk a lot about private label, and Andy Slammons is back with a new free course. It's the Smart Private Label course. S stands for selecting a product. M, manufacture with the right supplier. So important. Amazing photos, keyword research, and listing preparation is the A. R stands for ranking your product to the first page of search. We all know how critical that is. And then T is taking your product to the top of Amazon and beyond. This is a free course. It's going to help you get that foundation to do your own private label productness. You want to work smarter. Get it smarter. AmazingFreedom.com/smart. AmazingFreedom.com/smart. Tell Andy I sent you.
I told you, man, that was good. I enjoy the couple discussion because I just think it's so cool if you can design a life that would include your significant other and you can get along and stay married or stay together, whatever. That's very cool. So in this segment, we spend a lot of time talking about inventory, and the biggest item that affected Charlene's business this past year, which is up 51%. I mean, think about that, up 51%, and it's 100% wholesale. She's not going out and finding this stuff because where she lives, there are no stores. And yet she can make that work. And it's one tool. She hired a company, big cost. And you might think yourself, oh, that's expensive. No. Listen to what we talk about and think. Let it sit in with you and see if you can get there. Let's get back into the podcast. All right, we're back and we're talking with Charlene Anderson. And I'm just so excited because of the couple thing. I'm telling you, I can't wait. My wife listened to this episode because we have figured that out for ourselves. And it just makes it so much easier where you know what your boundaries are. We use these DISC profiles, and I have a program for it, but it shows my personality. Guess what? I'm pushy and dominant. Is that a surprise?
A big surprise.
Yeah. But my wife isn't, but it's
it teaches you how to communicate, because it's so important to communicate effectively. She will not do what I do. And guess what? I can't do what she does. 3 seconds in, I've lost interest and I'm moving on. But that's okay.
We have a group member that kind of fits that. She kind of got interested in this member's, the wife got interested in the Amazon business because he came to our group and saying, my wife is going crazy. My basement's in a mess. I need help organizing it to get my business more organized. So, and he sent a whole video of it. So I went through and gave, you know, we spent days. He had homework he had to do, posted on the group. So he had to be accountable to the whole group. Did you get this done today? Did you get that done today? Did you get that done? Do you know he got that basement like the way it should be, organized, efficient? He found inventory he forgot he had. He forgot, found boxes. But anyway, it got his wife interested in the business. And she is very meticulous and detail-oriented. You know, we saw pictures of the upstairs of the house, and you can tell that's the way she is. Well, she got interested in it. Fast forward about 9 months. And they are building a steel building. They have a fair bit of property, building a steel building on their property for their business, and she is going to manage it. Isn't that awesome?
It's awesome, because here's the thing is why she got interested, because she saw he changed. Because I guarantee you that basement was driving her crazy.
I know it was. Because it would drive me crazy.
But let me tell you, that could have been a relationship killer. I mean, you might have helped save a marriage there. Now, you know, I mean, I'm not kidding, though. I mean, you know, think about what people get divorced over in today's day and age. You might have been able to find them common ground for their relationship to move forward. I'm telling you, that's what I see in those things. That's a very, very cool. Whenever I do couples, it's funny. And what usually comes out, there's a respect, the trust, you know, that kind of conversation. And when I put that out there, eventually I'll see a spouse, usually a woman, send it to someone of the same last name. You need to see this. And I'm always like, oh. But here's where I go. I'm thinking to myself, that will be awesome if he's man enough to admit that he has shortcomings. And she feels connected to that. Therefore, there's probably some truth there. And so, man, if you can take that and do something with it, it's awesome to me.
Because obviously he's good at finding products.
Right.
You know, he has products that sell really well. He's not so good at the other part of it, which is fine. She is. So why not take advantage of that, you know?
But it's harder as a man because, you know, we're supposed to be able to do everything. And it's so untrue, but I mean, that's what we've been led to believe. Oh, you know, go eat something, you know, go kill something, drag it home. You're the provider. You're supposed to be in the kitchen, you know. I mean, that's unfortunately the way we were raised. Now, I think it's generationally changing pretty quickly, but that's hard as a guy.
Yeah, well, kudos to the group member who sees that this is a win-win for everybody.
Absolutely.
You know? And it brings in, I think, two other family members who are going to be working for them, doing processing and stuff, which I just love that, you know, that a couple were able to take this bone of contention and turn it into, oh, yeah, we can actually work together doing this. Yeah,
and this is a life. That's a life because, and I had this conversation this weekend, your business has become your life in some ways, right? They're commingled, right? I mean, it doesn't, you know, there are days that you turn it off when you were in Bora Bora, sort of, because you said you still had to have internet connection. So they really are the same today, but isn't that the part that's generally, when it's good, it's good. It's really good, right? I'm sure when it's bad, it sucks, but generally, it's really kind of cool the way things have evolved. I think that's a positive.
Oh, definitely. You know, I think we live in a very interesting time for business in general, with things changing so much. The whole internet explosion for business, but just the opportunity for people to work at home has changed so much. You know, I remember there was a magazine about 25 years ago called Home Office Computing, and it was all about setting up a home office. And I was interviewed for that because I worked at home. And it was not so much so common 25 years ago.
The
big thing was, how do you convince people that it's serious you work from home? Well, you say, well, the president of the United States works at home, you know, so that was kind of the big joke. But now it's changed, and it's almost like ordinary that you work at home. Nobody yeah. thinks anything of it that you work at home.
So I retired a couple weeks ago. And and I call it retirement because I walked away and I didn't take another job. I mean, I'm like,
congratulations.
No, thank
That's
you.
Awesome.
And I'm 51. And so it was like, well, wait, what are you going to go do? I'm like, same thing I've been doing for the last 6 years. We have a business and I'll just work in that and, you know, do some travel or whatever. But I'm here. My point, I'm home during the day. Literally today, I cut my grass and weed eat it. Normally, I'd be racing on the weekend. I'd kill myself on the weekend because that's the only free time I had. Mm-hmm. But I noticed today how many other people are out walking or walking their dogs. And these are not, you know, senior citizen. And I'm thinking to myself, I think they work from home too. I know one guy's an artist or whatever. And I agree with you. I think there is a significant shift depending where you live. You're going to start seeing more and more. I think you have no choice. In Charlene's original interview, which was number 76, I don't think I mentioned that, back in March of 2016, which is crazy how long it's been. You used to own a retail store.
I did.
Would you ever, and I know I asked this question, and I'll ask Deborah the same thing because I love her answer is the same. Could you ever conceive in your mind of owning one again?
No way.
Could you?
Heck no.
Knowing what you know what these small retailers are going through.
Exactly. And how much they actually make with overhead galore.
Right.
Heck no. I can make more. My husband and I share the spare bedroom as our office. We don't have a warehouse. We don't have employees. The stuff comes in, it goes out. That's it. You know, so we share one small office. We each have our own desk. So we have zero overhead. And yet we can, you know, make a really good money doing it. Why would I want to take on all that overhead, more than likely have to deal with employees, have to deal with shoplifting, all that other stuff that goes with owning a retail store? I wouldn't do it. You know, I just wouldn't. It's if you are like really invested in the people in your community, that's a different thing.
Right, right.
You know? But the people in my community wouldn't be buying my stuff anyway. We had a store in this town similar to the store I had in Hawaii. And it went out of business because there's not enough people here to do it. And I don't want to move. I love where I live. So I'm not moving. So that kind of rules that whole thing out, you know. But I think the opportunities for growth are far greater with e-commerce than there are with retail stores. At least for small businesses, one person, micro businesses.
Yeah, no, I agree with you because it's the silent employee, right? I think Jim Cockrum always used to call it the silent sales machine, right? E-commerce. Because basically you put it up and then it just sells and they don't complain. They never call off from work, right? They never get sick. And that's the truth. The other thing is you can carry so many more SKUs than what you could have, you know, in space, right? I mean, just... shelving yeah. wise, right? I mean, you can carry, you know, how many versions of cat food could you have? We use cat food, for example, right?
Yeah. I mean, I have 3,000 SKUs.
Wow.
3,000 SKUs.
That's crazy.
And probably at any one time, like 2,400 of them are active. So I couldn't afford a store big enough to carry all of that. Oh, heck no. You know, it takes business to a whole different level with far less in the way of overhead. You know, I mean, I've kind of set up my business when I started getting really serious about Amazon, when FBA came into play. That's when I decided, okay, this is a game changer now. I don't have to store the stuff, you know. It was a couple parameters. I live in a town that property is incredibly expensive. You know, a 10x10 little office rents for like $1,500 a month.
And
that does not include utilities or internet, any of that. So, I made these decisions. I don't want to have a warehouse. I don't want to have an office outside the house. Cause I don't want to have to drive to it in the winter too, you know?
Well, you get snow by the feet. You don't get inches of snow.
Yeah. It comes in feet. So that was another one. Second is I didn't want employees that I had to supervise. It is not my strong point. I just don't do it well. I've done it, don't like it, don't do it well. So that was it. I have VAs, I have a bookkeeper, I have an accountant and all that, but I don't have employees that I have to supervise myself. the VAs I've hired through a service that trains them and manages them for me, so I don't even have to do that. So those were like my two big things. No warehouse, no outside office, no employees. And I realize that that means I can only grow to a certain point. You know, there are physical limitations, there are time limitations that do it. But I've decided that's my trade-off, you know? So
there are a lot worse trade-offs.
Yeah. And it could be that maybe if I had a warehouse and an employee to do all the prep, I could double my sales. But does that mean I would double my profit? Probably not.
And does that make you double happy? You know, I think that's the thing to think about, too, is what works for you. You know, I have so many friends and so many people I talk to that sell so much more. And the responsibility, I remember it was Wilt Chamberlain saying, you know, Steve, when you sell $10 million versus $1 million, it is night and day. The issues that arise in a $10 million business, you never see in a $1 million business. And you think, oh, that's only 10 times bigger, but it's true. But it really is. It's right. It really is. And so I agree with you. I think once you find your happy place and you can maintain it, one of the other things I hear from a lot of sellers this year, I don't know if your experience is the same, is they have been focusing more on not as necessarily growing, but getting more from what they currently have, getting better margins, less hassle. Finding things, you know, already packaged or anything they can do to reduce touch points and things like that.
Yeah, the whole hassle factor. I factor that in when I look at products too. My thing is small, light, and expensive. That's what I want. That's my ideal product.
That's not a bad rule. Small, light, and expensive. That sounds like a shirt.
Maybe I should do a merch shirt.
You should. There you go.
The whole thing is that hassle factor has to be factored in. But I looked and I'm up 51% year to date over last year to date.
Wow. 51%.
And I know exactly where it came from. That's the great part is I can pinpoint it. Is I started using a piece of software or an online service called Restock Pro. Mm-hmm. And with 2,300 SKUs, it's hard to keep track.
Sure.
Without something like that. And that's what I was doing. My SKU numbers haven't grown since then. I'm still carrying the same number of SKUs. That's where I've been for a couple of years. But my out of stocks are far, far less than they were. So they have helped me find that balance of always having stuff in stock, but not having so much that I get killed on storage fees and
now,
have too much money tied that, up into
that integrates stock. Right into your Amazon account, correct?
It does. Yeah.
And it sends you, so you put in there a trigger point, a strike point saying, hey, you know, based on, or does it automatically based on historical sales automatically?
You can set up rules about how long it takes to get the stuff from your supplier.
Right.
How long it takes. For me, it takes 2 weeks to get things into Amazon. That's just because where I live, it takes forever. So you set up these rules based on each vendor. Mm. Or you could do them on an ASIN by ASIN basis, but I've done it on a vendor by vendor basis. And then after that's done, you can also tell it what is your minimum order that you want to set up for. I put that in so I can get free shipping, you know, on all the orders. So, and then every morning I go in and check the restocks suggestions on there. And when it hits the point where I get free shipping, then I put together an order. And I had unbelievably, I have one supplier that last Q4, and it's not a holiday product. It's a year-round kind of craft product. I was reordering every 2 days from this company. But it meant that I always had stuff flowing in, which we know helps you with the buy box if you always have stuff flowing in. I didn't run out of stock, and I sold a heck of a lot of stuff.
That's awesome.
I mean, yeah, I mean, so much that I got a personalized giant fruit cheese thing from the vendor in a beautiful wooden box branded with my store name on it.
Oh, now that's class. That's class. So,
Ron looked at it and goes, how much did you buy from them last year? And I said, I don't know. So I went and looked it up and I told him, he goes, oh yeah, they could afford that then, you know, but I have to say, and I don't get any money from Restock Pro for pitching their product, but I can pinpoint that's where my growth has come from, is not running out of stock.
Did it take away, because before then, was it in your head? Hey, I've got to worry about ordering. I've got to think about, see, you took that completely off the table now. You put enough work up front and trust in that product. You took that out of your head. That's a big deal.
It was, because, you know, with 2,300 SKUs, I'd sort them in a way that I thought, and I was using Inventory Lab, but its inventory numbers were not accurate. It didn't count the stuff inbound to Amazon, which killed me. Till I didn't realize it until I ended up with way too much of product, so it didn't count the inbound stuff. So it wasn't accurate enough for me. Restock Pro is, I think it's like $70 a month, but you know, if I can be up 50 some percent because of it, that $70 is nothing. And as you say, the psychological burden it relieves is huge.
For $840 a year. And that's the way you got to put in perspective, because everybody's like, oh, these fees. I'm like, it's $840 a year. You hired an inventory manager, right? That's, I mean, right. That's how much would an employee cost you to do? Let's just say, right? You know, let's say we're paying them $12 an hour. We got benefits and taxes, and oh, and then they're going to get sick and they're going to get vacation. And you hired one for $840 a year, and it's completely tax deductible.
Yeah. And I've trained them perfectly. Yeah. I put the stuff in, right?
You know, they give you no lip, do they? They never give you a fuss.
No. And you know,
so smart.
What?
So smart.
I go in every morning to look for the restock suggestions. And it takes me like maybe an hour a day to keep track of all of it over the 3,000 SKUs that are in there, to place the orders, to check on this, to check an hour a day. And that's the worst part of this business now, you know, is reorders, because a lot of my stuff is stuff that'll sell for the next 10 years because it's sold for the past 100 years in the craft field, you know?
That's so awesome.
And I'm really reluctant to try software solutions just because I'm old enough to have done all this stuff manually at one time, like on a ledger sheet doing inventory. You know that, those kind
I'm
of
I'm an
days.
Accountant by trade, trust me.
Yeah. So you know,
every December 31st I'd manually in the accountant whatever kind of company was in.
Yeah. And the beauty of this of Restock Pro is with the change in storage fees, where it now costs us a lot more to keep stuff at Amazon. They also have what they call a local inventory option that means I can keep stuff. I have four boxes in the garage because my stuff's small. So, you know, several hundred units. And it will tell me when it's time to pull those units from my local inventory and send them into Amazon, you know, based on the fact that I put 14 days as the time from when I ship to Amazon to when it'll go live. It'll predict based on the sales velocity.
And so that's an interim warehouse. So and so you could still take advantage of the buying opportunity to get the free shipping,
right.
And then you save on that long term storage, or you minimize the effect of the long term storage. That's genius.
Yeah.
Love it.
It's four banker's boxes in the garage.
But you know, it's funny. That's you adapted to a change that Amazon made. Because let's face it, we joke about it. We call them warehouses, but they're not. They're fulfillment centers. Right? They really only want to have things. They would like your stuff when it's on its way to their warehouse to be sold. So they really never have to put it on a shelf, right? That's the ideal. That's optimal, right? They basically bring
that's
it in
exactly
and it just goes right out. And so that challenge, and that's why they put these long-term storage fees in and why they keep increasing is they're saying, you know, Steve, Charlene, you need to sell your stuff faster. We want you to make more money faster. I mean, ultimately, that's what they want. And so you adapted by using a tool very smartly, and you hired an $840 a year inventory manager. I love it. Love it. Love it.
Yeah,
love it.
Yeah.
How
and
else?
I'm not one to pitch products, but that's one that has definitely changed my business. And it was a pain to set up.
Sure.
I got to admit, you have to sit there. And I did it during really bad weather. So it's been like a year ago, and you know, cause spring is bad here, you know, it could be snowing one day and warm the next. So I spent a couple days, and that's what I really focused on is getting the stuff in there, assigning products to vendors, making the rules and all that. And then once it's done, it's pretty simple.
Love it. And so you can just take a new vendor in and just set it. Now it's just set it and forget it. Kind of.
Yeah. Exactly. So then if I get a new vendor, I enter them as a new supplier, get the rules, you know, put contact information in, all of that. And then it will import my Amazon inventory. And if it finds new products that aren't already in there, you have to assign them to a vendor. So,
oh, nice.
Like I had eight this morning that I had to do, eight products I listed yesterday that were new products for me. And then so I went in and just assigned them to the vendor, and boom, they take on those rules.
Love it.
Oh, that's a power pro tip right there. What other things have you used to adapt to the change? Because I think, you know, I don't know if it was a pre-show or if we talked about it earlier, they're changing almost every day, right? And they're evolving, right? I love your example where you're seeing a different dashboard than others.
Yeah.
And somebody at this conference I was just at said, hey, when you start seeing things, that's a lead, but they are going to be implementing it all the way through very soon. So exactly. Pay attention to those things, right? What other things have you been doing to adapt?
I have really been working really hard. And this is probably the biggest thing anybody who's sourcing wholesale products for Amazon can do, is convincing my vendors why it's a bad idea to sell to Amazon, not on Amazon. And most manufacturers, distributors, you know, mom and pop or big ones, doesn't matter. They don't know the difference between selling to Amazon and selling on Amazon. And my job, I see it when I go to trade shows, is to explain to them the difference, explain to them why selling to Amazon is like the worst business move they can make, but let me sell on Amazon for them. That's kind of the past year, that's been my job at every trade show I've gone to.
And how's that conversation go? So you walk up to them and say, hey, you know, my name's Charlene and I sell e-commerce, right? Mm-hmm. Walk me through. Walk me through how that conversation would go.
I said, I'm 99% on Amazon. You know, I've been on Amazon for almost 17 years now. I know Amazon in and out. Are your products on Amazon? You know, I'll find out. And some will say, yeah, but we're doing it ourselves and we're not doing a really good job. That's like the ding, 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 perfect thing, right? Because then you can help them. I can solve your problem. You know, I don't want to sound like a cheesy used car salesman, but I'll tell them, I can fix that. You can have your products on Amazon, but you don't have to do anything. I can do your product pages. You know, I'll take care of shipping the stuff to Amazon. I'll take care of all the Amazon side of it. You just go back to your business and invent more cool stuff that people want, you know, so you don't have to deal with that. And they'll either say, well, I kind of like doing the Amazon thing, then that's fine. And, you know, it's almost like beating your head against a wall. So I move on. Or they'll say, really, you can do that? How does that work? And then you explain to them, you know, selling to me as an Amazon seller is just like selling to your art supply store in Chicago. You know, you ship me the products and I sell them and you don't have to worry about it. And then if they're really into that kind of deal, then you can talk to them about brand registry and brand gating and why it's really important and how you can help them get it done. Because it's not hard, but it's hard for them because they don't know about it, right? They don't know even what it is, how it will protect them, what they should do, where to even look for the page on Amazon. They don't know. So that's another big plus. I can help them do that, you know, and that one is a big deal for a lot of these mom and pop businesses that have invented a line of really cool products. But that's what they do, is they invent cool products and get them made, and then they're kind of lost.
How do you decide, right? So let's just say they did invent these products, and I'm trying to think of a nice dinner. My glass right here, right? I see this nice looking glass, and you say, wow, that's a really neat product. I think it might sell on Amazon. How do you determine that? Are you, because the products are not available. Let's just say they're not.
Okay.
So go ahead.
I'm a real niche seller or niche seller. There was a whole thing about that the other day about how to pronounce it. But anyway, I sell in a field.
Right.
I live the field. I had a brick and mortar in the field.
Hmm.
When I don't have any time, when I have time to just relax, I make stuff in this field. You know,
okay.
It's just like, it's just, so I know all my friends do this.
Okay. I was going to say that. Are you in groups of other people? So you're in, I remember Irma DeRoja saying the same thing when she, cause she sells certain group movie related stuff. So she's in those movie groups looking at what people are talking about and using that. Okay. So you're doing the same thing.
And I go to conferences, not trade shows, but conferences.
Oh, that's a pro tip.
On how, like, I love spinning, and not spinning the bicycle one, though I do that too, but spinning yarn, wool into yarn on a spinning wheel. That's one of the things I love to do. I go to conferences on that, where they have teachers from all over the world coming in and teaching techniques. And, you know, you hang out with people who like the same thing. that's where you find what the trends are, because it's going to be among those hardcore people who are willing to pay to go stay, you know, at a Holiday Inn and learn about this stuff. Those are the serious people. They're going to be the first ones, the canary in the mine on products, you know. And I listen and I watch, and I don't, those kind of things, watching means a lot, because you can see people's faces, how when they get a new tool, how do they react to it? It's like, is it that, like, ew, that kind of stink look, you know, where, ew, what is this? Or does their face light up? You know, that kind of thing.
You're doing product research. I mean, that's really you know, companies hire these companies to do exactly what you're doing. You're doing it yourself, and you're seeing people with problems, right? You get to see, oh, yeah, if you see two or three people with the same problem and you can help solve it by bringing a product to them that they don't know exists. Oh, my gosh.
Yep. And, love it. And I do think the knowledge, and that's why I talk in my group a lot about, you do have to, I think, narrow down what you're going to sell if you're going to move into wholesale. Mm-hmm. Retail arbitrage, online arbitrage, whole different kettle of fish. I live in a town without a Walmart or a Target or any of that kind of stuff. So it's like, that is not what I ever wanted to do. But if you're moving into wholesale, you do have to gain product knowledge in that field or that area or that niche you have chosen to sell in. That is your only advantage over the person who downloads all the UPCs and the prices from a vendor and then runs it through a program to find out what's good and what's not, you know. So that's your ace in the hole, is the product knowledge is king. Because I have bought products that people have passed by at a trade show. I mean, it was a small booth. A woman from India brought this line of products to a show. I thought they were like the coolest thing ever. And I'm like, man, these are, and you know, really good margins, even considering shipping from India, really good margins, all of that. And you know, she said I was the only one who bought these products at that show, and I cannot keep them in stock. It's like,
wow.
But I saw something in it because of how it was, they're made of wood. They just have a look that's really people like, and you know, it's being out there. And I think I do really have a problem with people trying to get into it where it's all data driven. So All you're doing UPCs, price, sales rank, that's it. You don't care about the product. First of all, that's not fun. I don't think, you know, The fun is discovering the products and thinking about the products and analyzing the products on a product by product basis. You know, most of my products now I bring to Amazon, they're not on there. So I don't have sales ranks to look at. I don't have any of that kind of data. It comes from knowing the people, my customers who would buy it, people like me, would you buy it or not? You know, is the price where you'd pay for it or not? And then past experience in having been in retail in this field for over 30 years, you know? And I think that's where a lot of people miss the boat, is they're so focused on the data, they forget the real life parts of it, you know?
And I think that's so important to say that there, if you're trying, well, you're, because of the life piece, I guess, you know, I had this discussion with someone if you're creating a private label brand, you know, what are you going to do with that brand, right? You're creating the brand, and more than likely you're going to sell the brand, right? And that makes sense if that's your thing, right? But if you're trying to create a lifestyle business, you better darn well enjoy it, and you better enjoy what you're selling. Selling widgets isn't fun unless you're into the widget business, right? I mean, because otherwise it gets boring after a while. Then it's like, okay, something else, you know. If you want to keep your interest and make it part of your life, right? You're excited still about this. And how long have you been in the craft side? I mean, how long? It's been a long time.
I opened my retail store in Honolulu in 1984.
Okay, so Steve's 33 years, right? 33 years. You're still excited about it.
Oh, yeah. I'm going to a trade show next month that I can't wait. I can't wait to see what's there, you know?
But very cool.
Send me to Toy Fair in New York.
Oh, yeah, me too. Yeah, no, I'm with you.
You know, I don't enjoy toys. It's not something I have an interest in. And I think handling toys all day and thinking toys all day for me would be hell. For other people, handling craft stuff would be their idea of hell, you know?
So
That's the beauty of this business, too, is you can make it fit you as a person or a family or a couple or whatever, you know? You have to want to deal with the products, though. You know, you have to be interested enough to come up with good descriptions if you're bringing products. And if you don't care about it, it's really hard to write a good description.
It really is. And if you're just using the tools out there, which you got to use additionally, you're not going to get it deep enough, right? I mean, you're not. You got to go on your own too. Oh, I love it. Oh, God, I get smarter every time I talk with you. I'm telling you. So you guys, I'm going to let you pitch your podcast because you have two different podcasts that you do. One's Not Enough. She's got to show me up, right? Yeah, there's no competition here. She's crushing me. So you and Deborah.
You got a fancy microphone and everything.
Oh, I'm real fancy. Yeah. You and Deborah, Thrifting for Profit. And you guys have been doing that forever. You don't really talk thrifting anymore, but it's really a concept, right? It really is.
Starting with nothing.
Right, kind of. Right,
but
right.
But it's evolved. A lot of people who listen are into wholesale, you know? It's part of Deborah's group, her Facebook group, Thrifting for Profit, over 20,000 members.
Wow.
It's just a variety of stuff. Like our podcast yesterday, we talked about promotional ideas. And how to use Pinterest to best advantage for Amazon.
Which is natural for what a lot of products.
Yeah. If the product is visual, Pinterest is where it should be, you know. So that's the one. That's on Wednesdays at noon Mountain Time. That would be 2 Eastern Time. I have to get my times right. Then my second podcast is part of the private group that I run, the Wholesale Sourcing Experts group. So it's only available to listen to people who are part of the group. And that's on Wednesday, every other Wednesday at 10 a.m. Mountain.
And do you record these? I know Deborah's, hers are. Okay. So if somebody can't make it. Okay.
Right. So if you're a member of the Wholesale Sourcing Experts group and you can't make it, you can listen to the replay. So I think we're at like 200 and some podcasts in Thrifting for Profit and, almost 55. I think we're at 54 right now in Wholesale Sourcing. And Wholesale Sourcing Experts, we had a 3-part series on photography for Amazon and eBay that went to 7 parts. You know, 3 wasn't enough. We just had more and more content. So it's like 7 2-hour webinars, or Ron calls them TV shows. My husband, Ron, he was a professional photographer, so he knows of what he speaks. It's set up with 3 video cameras, so you can see overhead to the photography, you can see through the camera, you can see him talking to camera, you know, and then there's the screens. It was really complicated. But that's 7 parts, I believe, were done on photographing for Amazon and eBay with real world stuff. People sent us stuff. How do you photograph this?
Yeah. Because it's important. Those things. Glares, curves, all the angles, shadows.
White things.
Yep.
Because you have to be on a white background, you know what I mean? Yeah, so that, then we've also had the multi-camera webinars talking about, a big series on Know Your Numbers. What numbers do you need to keep track of?
Mm.
What numbers don't matter? How do you get to those numbers? What are those numbers called? That was a whole one that was like you as an accountant could appreciate the importance of that.
I'm a reformed accountant. Remember, I'm a retired accountant. I don't, you know, it's funny. I don't even do my own taxes, and people look at me like I'm crazy. I mean, of course I have an accounting degree. You specialize in something. Uh-huh. I didn't specialize in it. I'm not willing to keep up on it and read all that crap. I'm not interested. I'm out. So pay a guy.
I've had the same accountant since 1981.
Wow.
Same person in Honolulu. So I have to FedEx all my stuff to Hawaii to have it done. But, you know, when somebody knows you that long, they know your life and all that kind of stuff. I don't have to say anything. I just send the worksheet and the forms and all that, and I'm good to go. You know, it's there's no way I'd do it myself. No way.
Well, I want to close out, but I always like to have something to help people move their business forward. And I, quite frankly, there are a bunch of takeaways I'm going to take away, but the Restock Pro, you know, where you're at makes so much sense. And I know there are other inventory items out there that integrate too. But I love the fact that we broke it down into an $840 employee.
Yeah,
I mean, I think that's perspective. I think people have to get that. It's not $70 a month. It's $840 a year for an employee. I mean, to me,
and
that's
a big
deal.
I'm thinking it's at least a half-time employee.
Wow.
At least half-time to do it all.
Well,
You know? I think I'm going to have the labor people be talking with you because I don't think you're paying minimum wage. That doesn't sound like minimum wage, you know. But
yeah, exactly.
So the goal is to help people move forward. And I think you've done a very good job of helping. Give me something else. And it could be couple related. I love this story about your husband. So it could be that or what, you know, or what you're hearing in your group and what advice you would give them to help them get past the point of stuck.
Well, a lot of it depends on why you're stuck.
Let's just say they're selling $30,000 a month, and you know that's not quite a full time income, right? And so they're trying to get past that, but it just they're spinning.
So I would say, look at why you're stuck. Is it stuck because you haven't found any new products? Mm-hmm. Are you stuck because you are maxed out on the time you have to process stuff, and it may be time to get a prep service involved? Or are you stuck just because you're stuck and you just don't want to work anymore? And, you know, if it's that one where you're working as hard as you want to work, then you kind of have to accept that being stuck there.
That's where you're going to stay. Right.
Right. Exactly. And there's nothing wrong with that as long as it's a decision, not a, oh, I fell into this, you know. It's a decision that this is where I'm going to be because I can only put in 2 hours an evening and 4 hours on the weekends. And I'm working as efficiently as I can. If you're not working as efficiently, look into software solutions, you know, that kind of stuff. I think the big stuck comes from people just get complacent. And they've got those product lines that are selling well and all of that, but there is no way you're going to sell more of X product than you're selling, let's just say. You know, you've maxed out everything, your ads are working, all that. You're just going to have to find more products. And you're going to have to figure out how to do that, whether it be get sales reps to come to you, go to trade shows, get trade magazines in the niches you're selling, take a drive through the industrial area of your town and look for signs from small manufacturing businesses that are there. Maybe they got a cool product that isn't on Amazon yet. You know, just that kind of stuck, I think, is the easiest one to do. But it's the physically and mentally the hardest one, you know, is finding those new products. I have a woman in my group who was stuck. She was stuck. She was selling, you know, enough to make it definitely worth her while, but it wasn't what she was doing. And she's a very introverted, quiet woman. I got to meet her last year when I went to a trade show. She was in the city where the trade show was, so we got to meet. And I kept telling her, you got to go to a trade show. Your niche has like four great trade shows with hundreds, if not thousands, of vendors at each of them. No, I can't go. I can't deal with the people. You know, it's just too stressful. Well, she finally decided to go, and it was a difficult thing to get her convinced to go. She went. I got a picture on my phone the first day, her standing there at the show in a booth with the biggest smile on her face.
That's awesome.
She says, it is like heaven here because it's all the products she loves, right? Because it's her niche. It's people who love the products she loves because they're selling them. It's their businesses. It was an amazing change. So if it's the fear thing that's keeping you stuck, that you don't want to go to a trade show, take a lesson from this person. Because I think it's the best thing she's ever done for her business.
It's like a light bulb went on, or the light beamed down, the clouds opened, and all of a sudden, wow.
And how much self-confidence has she built up?
Oh, my gosh.
She went to the show. I told her to go meet with her existing vendors first because that's the least scary thing. You already have a relationship with them.
Mm-hmm.
So she did it. She got better deals, better pricing because she was there in person and could talk
on
her existing vendors. So that's kind of the takeaway. Just get out and do it.
Love it. There's the pro tip right there. Man, I appreciate you taking the time, especially when we had some computer issues, and we worked through them, didn't we?
We got stubborn.
We are stubborn. We will get through it. Can't wait to talk with you again. Can't wait to catch up. I wish you nothing but success. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Stephen. Bye-bye, everybody.
It was almost like a marriage counseling session there, wasn't it? It really is important that relationship is real serious. And you get that respect and that trust into the business, and you find your roles. I love how her husband does the photography because that's his way. That's what he knows. And yet she can do the PPC because she's into the detail and the minutiae of it. That's what makes a great partnership, more importantly, a marriage work.
Great advice. Great sound advice. ecommercemomentum.com, ecommercemomentum.com. Take care.
Thanks for listening to the e-commerce Momentum Podcast. All the links mentioned today can be found at ecommercemomentum.com under this episode number. Please remember to subscribe and like us on iTunes.